Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And back to the story that we covered last week. It's in the news again because the award-winning Doc on One Team, RT Radio 1, Doc on One Team have made a podcast series which you can access fairly easily. It's called The Real Carrie Jade. And then we discovered that the real Carrie Jade, her name is, among others, but her real name is Samantha Cooks. And she had, on four separate occasions, we discovered, tried to get on Liveline to get money for various different projects. Maria, as the fella said. And then we had a number of people on the programme last week who, once they heard her voice, and this is the voice of Samantha Cooks. Let's listen to her voice, which might jog people's memory.
Imagine if I drew a line on your feet and you could only feel one side or the other. You just feel a bit sort of wonky.
No, these are the two coffee shops. But I always feel like if you're going to one, you have to go into the other. So I like this one. So when I'm with Fionn, I make him go and buy from the one next door. And then we take them home.
Reverend William Hayes of Tullamore Presbyterian Church in County Offaly. William, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And do you recognise that voice?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, it was very strange. Whenever this podcast came out, my wife sent me over a message saying, hey, do we remember this lady? And we had known her as Samantha Cooks, which, I mean, I presume maybe that's her real name. I don't know.
Yeah, it is a bit.
That was. Yeah, but she came along to our church for a relatively short period. I mean, we don't have a huge amount to kind of add to this story in some ways, Joe, but it's but she came along to Tullamore Presbyterian Church for, we think, maybe about, we don't know, about six or seven weeks in 2014. And very quickly we realised that there was something not quite right there that was going on with her. She had turned up, small church, you know, we're always very open and welcoming to people whenever they come in, and so we ask people lots of questions and things like that, and very quickly her story sounded very strange. So it did. There was all sorts of bits of her story that seemed to be kind of far too neatly connected into what we were doing as a church. We were just starting with some refugee work at that stage, which we've kept on doing over the years, but we did some stuff in conjunction with the council. And, you know, she seemed to kind of know people all over the place. And on the one hand, part of me was kind of thinking, oh, right, okay, God sent somebody here to really help us. But on the other hand, I was thinking, gosh, this all sounds quite neat, if you know what I mean, and a little suspiciously neat in some of this. And also little bits of her story didn't join up. So what we thought, Joe, was we had maybe somebody who just wasn't quite well, a bit of a fantasist, and we just kind of went to go and look her up a wee bit online, because we kind of thought, you know, she's somebody who's not quite here among her own people or whatever, and if she isn't all that well, and if there's all these kind of issues with her, then you know, maybe we can try and find somebody who could help her a wee bit, or maybe somebody was missing her. But now, thankfully, she did use her real name, because it meant that whenever we did look her up, we saw some of the and some of the really quite tragic stuff there with the surrogacy issues and various other kind of stuff. I know that there was allegations made in the papers that maybe haven't gone to trial and so on in England, so we can't really, you know, say too much about those, but stuff that was alleged anyway.
She did dupe an innocent couple out of money for surrogacy, which the judge described as a cruel crime.
Yeah, and we saw the photographs from that trial, and we thought, gosh, that's her. So it is. So we got a wee bit worried at that point then, because we'd saw the stuff online that the English police were looking for. We got in touch with guards locally. They said, yeah, they had heard about this, that they had thought that she was in another part of Offaly at that stage, where they were concerned that she might have done another fraud on somebody there.
Okay.
And so we decided then, as the elders in the Presbyterian Church are the kind of body that look after the church, and one of the group of elders there, and we decided that we would just kind of have a word with her on the Sunday morning before church started. Now, thankfully, she's one of the very few people who ever turns up on time, who ever turned up on time to the church in Tullamore. We got great timekeeping here. She was there a bit early, and myself and one of the elders, we just asked her to step out the front somewhere public at the church garden and just asked her about this kind of stuff. I mean, you know, we said, look, we know who you are. We know a little bit about your story, and we know that within our own congregation there are some people who have had difficult pasts and so on. So we weren't trying to say to her, you know, we're judging you or whatever in this one. But we said, if you're here and you want to make a fresh start, just be honest with us and start to talk about this, and we can see what we can do to talk to the guards and all that kind of thing with you. But if you're here to try and defraud people, then, you know, we really don't want you here to try and defraud people. And, you know, it was the weirdest moment because, as you can guess from that stuff that you were playing, you know, she's got this kind of happy demeanor, if you know what I mean. And then that dropped. It was like a mask. So it just dropped. And she very coldly said, you know, could you get my bags from the church? I'm going. And it was just the sheer change, the sudden change that happened there that actually kind of frightened me a wee bit, because I thought, this isn't just somebody who's a bit vulnerable or whatever. This has been an act that has been going on here. So we weren't too keen on, you know, either of us going and picking up her bag and then maybe being accused of taking something out of it. So we asked her to go in and pick it up. She picked it up and she went away. And we knew at that stage that she had been, you know, she got very involved in the local community. She'd been volunteering in different organizations and so on. So we very quickly then kind of phoned around whoever we knew at that stage just to say, look, we're a bit worried about this person, that we don't think that they're there with the most honest of intentions.
And you were walking a fine line, Reverend, because on the one hand, it is your ministry, it doesn't need to be a ministry. People have it in them, the humanity. Yep. You don't want to be, you're saying to yourself, maybe this person needs help. Yep. And we have to walk a fine line between accusing her and offering a helping hand. But you're saying she quite quickly rejected. Did she show any interest in the helping hand?
No, not at all. That was the bit that was actually a bit scary at that stage. It was literally like a mask slipped. Just she went from being kind of, you know, oh, I'm so confused at what you're saying here, to just suddenly like, okay, I've been spotted. I'm outed here, and this, I'm gone. And that was, I just found that a bit weird. The elder who was with me at the time, he agreed as well that it literally just looked like a different face almost, you know, the kind of friendly, happy demeanor had disappeared, and this very cold, angry look just suddenly, you know.
Okay,
in.
And then you say, you, as you said earlier, William, you can detect it in her voice. Here's a longer clip of her voice from the Dockham one, the real Carrie Jade.
I was born in Bessborough in Cork. So I was born obviously in Ireland and then I was adopted, but I grew up in the UK. My mum was one of the first to be allowed to adopt as a single parent. I was adopted because my mum thought there was too many people on the planet. Okay. So even my adoption was some sort of, my mum was a bit of a rebel back in the day and very much a feminist. I love her to pieces. You know, I went to Steiner school, so my grandparents were horrified at that. I think my grandparents were convinced I would never learn to read or write. I grew up as a kid on protest marches and all of that. So that was our holidays. Like, some children got taken to, you know, SeaWorld in Florida. I got taken to stand outside to like protest poor Tillicum the whale. My mum would always have her opinions on things. And I can always remember my grandmother always used to say, oh, well, that's because we let you listen to David Bowie.
Yeah, that's her again, obviously.
The really weird bit about that, Joe, is that that's actually the plot of a book called The Horizontal Epistles of Andromeda Veil. It's this kind of comedy writer called Adrian Plath who writes that. And some of those lines are straight out of Adrian Plath.
Well, tell us the name of the book again, William, sorry.
It's been years ago since I've read it. The Horizontal Epistles of Andromeda Veil. It's about a little girl who is in who's in hospital, and her mother is one of the Greenham Common women. And they she writes out all these letters and stuff like that. So it's kind of, you know, 50% funny and 50% tragic at the same time. But she was just literally, I've never heard that bit there, but I've just, she was just literally kind of quoting lines from that by the writer Adrian Plath.
Yeah. And did she say she could speak Hebrew?
Yeah, there was. She said she was brought up in a Hebrew. No, she said she was brought up in a Hebrew speaking environment. So she was. And what had happened is one of the older ladies in church had said, and you see, it all sounds a bit fanciful when you say it like this. So it does, because one of the older ladies in church had said something to her, and she just kind of didn't register what what the lady was saying in Hebrew. And it was just wee funny things like that, that just the story didn't join up. And at that stage, you know, we weren't thinking, oh, this is somebody who's a fraudster here. We were thinking, oh, maybe this is just somebody who kind of, you know, you get, I don't know, is it Walter Mitty figures? Is that the term?
I can't remember the exact.
But, you know, you get people who just make stuff up. So, you know, and we kind of worried that maybe she was a vulnerable person like that. Mm-hmm. And it was only then whenever we went to go and look her up online and just to see, you know, was there something wrong here, or was there somebody, you know, looking for this person or whatever? And this, we realised, though, it might not be quite as, you know, it might be a wee bit more sinister than that.
Yeah. Then the problem is, one, we know she has taken money on other occasions, but two, maybe it doesn't in your case, but it does make people very, very weird. Like she was going on there about Bessborough and her mother being born in Bessborough, which is, as you know, a mother and baby home. But now what she's doing is diluting in some way invalidating. If someone else comes on to that, can I talk about Bessborough? Immediately you're saying, is this another Samantha Cooks?
Like
someone coming on looking for money, or someone that she is affecting genuine stories and genuine people, and she's making people, I don't know, would it make you cynical? Would it make you not trust people? Because she's not trust, whatever we can say about her, and she has been convicted, but she's not trustworthy, to say the least.
Yeah.
I'm baffled by, and I'm baffled, I'm intrigued by your superior knowledge, William. I thought you were going to say the quote was from Ulysses from yesterday, so to speak, but it's from the Horizontal Epistles of Andromeda.
It's just, it's some of the stuff that the character there says, because she's kind of abandoned in this little hospital.
Okay, let's hear it again. Let's hear it again, and you can tell it.
I was born in Bessborough in Cork. So I was born, obviously, in Ireland, and then I was adopted, but I grew up in the UK. My mum was one of the first to be allowed to adopt as a single parent. I was adopted because my mum thought there was too many people on the planet. Okay. So even my adoption was some sort of... my mum was a bit of a rebel back in the day and very much a feminist. I love her to pieces. You know, I went to Steiner school, so my grandparents were horrified at that. I think my grandparents were convinced I would never learn to read or write. I grew up as a kid on protest marches and all of that. So that was our holidays. Some children got taken to, you know, SeaWorld in Florida. I got taken to stand outside to protest poor Tillicum the whale. My mum would always have her opinions on things. And I can always remember my grandmother always used to say, oh, well, that's because we let you listen to David Bowie.
What's the similarities?
So those two bits at the end there, a bit about the other kids got taken to SeaWorld. I went to go and protest whatever the whale was. I couldn't make out the name there. Yeah. And then a bit about the grandmother saying that it was because she got allowed to listen to David Bowie. Yeah, it's really funny, actually. So it is. Yeah, because that's quite an obscure book. You have to be really kind of steeped in English evangelicalism to go reading those books. So you do. So, I mean, maybe that tells you a bit about her actual background, if she has picked up one of those and read those. But yeah, that's just really weird to hear that and to go, oh yeah, I remember that story.
Well, maybe if she is of a Christian bent, so to speak, she might have a Damascene conversion. Will she come on radio and say, I'm sorry and I don't mean to upset people?
I wish she would, but as long as she doesn't keep going about being a danger with that. And then some people, you know, can cynically use that as, you know, you see that maybe not so much this side of the world, but certainly over in America, you see that with politicians where they all of a sudden they come to faith and, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, they make up CVs and false CDs. And then, but invariably, your own lies trip you up. You have to you have to remember the lies you told.
And that was what the issue was with this, was that it didn't all join up, or you know, also in some ways she bumped into a bunch of people with, in the case of some of the older folks in our congregation, with a wee bit more knowledge than maybe she was expecting on some of the issues, which, you know, which again just left us with this kind of, you know, really, is she actually, you know, was this, you know, actually what she was, where she was brought up, or is this actually what happened with her?
Well, apparently she's still in Ireland. That's the latest we've heard.
Oh, right.
Yeah, down maybe around the southeast.
Right.
And she seemed to drift towards churches. Like in Glenageary, she was involved in the church, and now we know in Tullamore she was involved in your church. So,
well, thankfully only for a few weeks, because I didn't think what kind of damage she could have done if she'd been there for longer. And we felt so scared, because I feel like, you know, now that this has kind of come out like this, I feel glad that we did what we did. But at the time, we genuinely felt a bit stupid doing this, you know, because there's this lady who's turned up in church, and we're busy saying to her, we think that you're a fraudster, you know, and thank God it's been kind of vindicated.
It is very difficult to come up with a formula of words that will call out a fraudster when you weren't 100% sure.
It's
happened on this program from time to time, but you start doubting yourself. You say, hang on a minute, maybe this call is genuine, and even but whatever. Apparently, to another caller, she said she had been a Scientologist.
Yeah, that was part of her backstory too. So it was.
All the questions, William. Your faith in humanity, was it rattled, or is it just more of the rich tapestry of life?
Joe, I'm a Calvinist, so I am, in that I'm a Presbyterian, and one of our beliefs is this idea of, it's got a really quaint old name called total depravity, which doesn't mean that everybody's totally depraved, but it just means that everybody's got a big bit of brokenness in each and every one of us. So you're not, you know, even your St. Francis's or your whoever, you know, like the most holy people that you can think of, they've all got a bit of brokenness in them. So in that sense, you know, I don't mean that Calvinism is a kind of, or Presbyterianism is a cynical religion in that kind of sense, but you don't expect people to be perfect. So you don't, but equally you don't expect somebody to come up and be a complete fraudster turning up in
deliberately.
But you do know that there is that brokenness there in everybody. So you do. So it doesn't affect it in that sense, in that it's what we sort of expect on one level, but equally it was pretty brazen and it was pretty out there. So it was to be, you know, and like I said, I'm very glad that we caught it early on, because the damage that could have been done, either to maybe some of the more vulnerable people in the congregation, they'd used the good name of the congregation to go and defraud somebody outside of it, then either way that could
She has got money off people under false pretenses. That's clear as well. I didn't. So are you a Calvinist or a Presbyterian, or is that a stupid question?
Well, that's the same thing.
Okay.
They're both the Presbyterianism was founded by French refugees that had to leave France because they kind of called out what we saw as some of the abuses in the Catholic Church in the 16th century. And whenever they arrived up in Geneva, which was a slightly more open place. I mean, nobody was open in those days, but slightly more open place. Their kind of main organizer was a guy called John Calvin. And so that's where the term Calvinism comes from. So it is. And Presbyterians were kind of founded there, and then sort of spread out around the world, came into Ireland in the 1500s as well. So we did. Spread out all over the place. So you can use the term Calvinist or Presbyterian. We use them interchangeably. So we do.
Okay. And the whole, when you say Calvinism, the whole image of austerity and people who.
Yeah, that kind of comes in there with it. So it does. Again, I don't want to sound rude to our American friends, but I suspect it's a bit more from over there than it is. Yeah, I mean, Irish Presbyterianism does get a reputation for that, and you get this idea of dour Presbyterians, and to be fair, you know, they do exist. So they do. But it's actually, it's quite a joyful faith. in a lot of ways, very plain, very simple, but very mm-hmm. joyful. You know, it's not a kind of a dour thing. So it isn't in ways like that. But I don't know, you get a reputation and it sticks sometimes, doesn't it? You know, with these kind of things. I don't know where that sort of idea came from. And maybe we were at one point and we're not so much anymore. Yeah.
And then, but what frame does Calvinism put on society? And
it's the same kind of idea. It's this idea that there is God's common grace in the world that mm-hmm. that keeps society together and helps people to work for the good. But then okay. again, within every person that's there is this brokenness. There's this sinful brokenness that Jesus has to fix, and literally only Jesus can fix in that. So and in that sense, it's not that different from Catholic theology.
Okay.
In this, I mean, one of Calvin's goals in this was to kind of get back to good basic Catholic theology. He was looking at the likes of St. Augustine and people like that, and trying to say, okay, we've made a mess of the church, you know, with all the corruption and so on, but look, let's try and get back to okay. some real kind of early church basics, some good Catholic theology in this. So so that's what it sort of says about the rest of society, is that it is again that mixture of God's common grace making good and all the brokenness within us.
Okay, I'm beginning to sound like I'm presenting the meaning of life that I was doing at the weekend.
I know, recording. Yeah, I was on to talk about this. I mean, I'll preach all day, Joe, if you want me to.
But,
I mean,
William, what happens to us? Is there a next life? Where do we go when we die? What do Calvinists Calvin, what do you believe?
What do we believe?
Yeah.
We believe what the Bible tells us about this, Joe, is that that it's appointed for people just to die once, and then there's the judgment. And, you know, that we will, like, and it's the same, you know, as we're Catholics, too, you know, that we will come before God on Judgment Day, and God's going to be asking us, you know, what did you do with the salvation that I offered you in Jesus? You know, and that's the big thing. So it is, it's, you know, we can stand before God in God's grace that he's given us, or we can try and stand before God in our own goodness, and God's not going to be too happy with the idea of us trying to say we're good enough for him. All of it basically boils down to us saying we're broken, we're sinful, you know, only God can fix this, and he gets the opportunity to do that through Jesus. You know, that's okay. whatever, whether it's Calvinism, Catholicism, Anglicanism, you know, any kind of Christianism that there is there,
have we got free will, or is everything predestined?
Oh yeah, that's one of our kind of ongoing arguments all the time. So it is. Yeah, the Calvin's take on that is that we've got a lot less free will than we think that we have.
Ah.
That because of sin and brokenness in the world, we think that we're free, but we're always, it's like, you know, it's like those kind of satellites that lose their power up in space, and all they can do is inevitably be falling back down to Earth, you know, mm-hmm. and burning up like that. That we're like that. We, because of sin, we've lost a lot of what we think of as our free will. And you see that with, I mean, I'm not going to say anything about yourself, Joe, but you see that with most of us, that, you know, the good that we want to do, you know, we don't end up doing it, you know, and the bad stuff that we don't want to do, we do end up doing it. And, you know, that's just straight out of St. Paul saying that. And that's where, you know, that's where our free will doesn't always operate too well on that. And that's why, you know, we can't fix ourselves in this. It's always just got to be Jesus fixing ourselves, or fixing us, not Jesus fixing ourselves, Jesus fixing us. Is the way that this works, rather than us saying that we can fix us. So we don't have the power or the free will to go out and fix ourselves. We need God to make us alive and draw us to him, and, you know, and mm-hmm. to be able to cleanse our sin and heal us through Jesus.
Okay. By the way, you mentioned, when just finally, you have a small congregation in Tullamore.
Yeah.
How do you fund yourselves?
Well, the Presbyterian Church in Ireland it's got a few hundred congregations across the island, and so thankfully the folks in the central church, and you know, they kind of share the resources of all the churches mm-hmm. together. So we churches like ours are able to be kind of propped up a bit. So we are with that, and we're seeing that quite dramatically with the fact that our building is falling apart at the minute. Folks from central church are helping us to get that, and as well as folks from, actually, I need to say, big thank you. Folks from Offaly County Council are helping as well, with very dramatically.
I just wonder, is that why you asked Samantha to step out into the garden that day? You were afraid the roof might come down on top of you if your allegation was untrue.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time that the roof has come in that building. The first week that we held our parent and toddler group, we had to hold it in the back hall instead of the front hall because the roof came in, or the ceiling came in. So it did. So yeah, no, that's a problem with 165-year-old buildings or 160-year-old
buildings. Yeah, but at least, unlike Rishi Sunak, when you looked up in your church, you had no roof, so you had sky. Okay. William Hayes, kind regards to you and your congregation in fellowship. That is the Reverend William Hayes. But we were talking about Samantha Cook, and I hope Samantha will come forward and explain or talk to people about what has been going on. Okay, thanks indeed, Reverend William Hayes from the Tullamore Presbyterian Church.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And as soon as we get a result from the Aer Lingus pilots ballot, but I see the Aer Lingus head office are now saying that they are questioning the speed of the paper ballot. As you know, there was an electronic ballot initially, 98% voted, 98% voted for strike action. And then Aer Lingus said there was questions. They sent a solicitor there to the union. There was questions to be answered about the veracity and the validity of an electronic vote. The union said there isn't, but they said in lieu of Aer Lingus going to the High Court and a long row, so to speak, and a costly row, they would redo the ballot over the weekend, and it would be a paper ballot, and it would be in Dublin and Cork. Now, I presume that means every Aer Lingus pilot at some stage over the past weekend was able to get to the office in Dublin or Cork to vote, because it's a paper. Now, it doesn't say if it's a face-to-face paper ballot, but it is a paper ballot. So as soon as we get any results now, there's little doubt it's going to be, given I read out the statements on Friday from the union and from Aer Lingus, there's no love lost, to say the least. There's no doubt that they're going to vote in favour of industrial action. And then, as one of our listeners raised on Friday, he said Aer Lingus are looking for 15 days notice, because that changes the algorithm, so to speak, of how they refund and what they have to refund passengers. Aer Lingus, in fairness, are saying the reason we want 15 days is so we can get working to help people with alternatives. So we wait and see. Okay, tourism, and I heard Michael O'Leary this morning, he's on with Pat Kenny, and he was saying 60% of traffic comes into Ireland, of airline traffic, and they were talking about tourism, and if Aer Lingus went on strike, though he did make the point there, Ryanair twice as big as Aer Lingus. So he said tourism will be affected. Among other things, he called the pilots. He said they were blackmailing Aer Lingus. Ben, good afternoon, Ben. Now, this is tourism problems, but camper van problems. Tell us, it's in Lahinch.
It is, Joe. How are you?
Good. Tell us.
I suppose I'm on the phone because we have a huge amount of camper vans come to the prom in Lahinch, because it's obviously famous for surfing and it's a tourist town, etc. But there are no facilities for them, and it's a real issue because we can have up to 30 to 40 camper vans on the prom on a Sunday morning. There are no public toilets, there are no public showers, there's nowhere to deposit their toilets, waste, exactly, and even recharging areas. So we have a surf school on the prom here, and for a number of years we have people coming in looking to refill their water, empty their toilets, charge their phones, etc. And we just had to say, eventually there were so many coming in, we just had to say we can't do it. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. We just had to stop. And it's being ignored by the council. You know, we've had councillors over, we've had meetings with them, and the bylaws actually state that nobody can camp overnight.
Okay.
So they're officially breaking the bylaws, but the bylaws are being ignored both by the camper vans, but also by the council, because they don't want to invest in it. There is an argument that, you know, camper vans don't spend any money, etc. And I don't buy that. You know, they come into the town, they go shopping, they go to the pubs, they go to the restaurants, they come into our cells for equipment and things. So they are a big part of the tourism trade.
Yeah.
But we need to look after them. Do you know what I mean? And there's just a kind of a stall, or they're just ignoring it within the council and within those people who can influence and change things.
And there's no prospect that the council would supply facilities for camper vans.
Well, this is what we've suggested to them, but there's absolutely no action on it. I suppose COVID particularly brought it to a head. Post-COVID, a lot of people were staying in Ireland, and the camper vans, it went a bit mad, to be honest. And we had a lot of problems with waste being dumped and people looking for to use laneways as toilets late in the evening and things like that. Now, it has settled down a bit, but since then, we have been on to the council and there has been no action whatsoever. And it's not only Lahinch-based, you know, I've spoken to people in Kilkee and Kilrush, even in Achill. There's a lovely area that camper vans used to park in, and they've actually blocked it off now.
So that
people are forced into campsites, etc. And it was fine when it's one or two, but when it's 40 to 50, that has an effect on lots of things in the area. Even locals who want to come down and use the beach, there's no parking in certain parts now because of it.
And I was reading, because camper, especially on the continent and in the UK, it's a very, very big leisure activity. But I was reading, I think it was in Motorhomes, one of those magazines, and they were saying that because of the age demographic of camper van owners and users, they're normally a little bit older, so to speak. A lot of them could be retired, and their dream is to have a camper van. But they are the group that will spend the money in eating out or having a few drinks, because they have a few extra bob, so to speak.
Completely, and they have that freedom, and they come down regularly. And we would see often. We would see, you know, we'd have our regulars down on the promenade here. You'd see them every couple of weeks, and so on. But there's also camper van companies that rent out. You know, so you come over from France, you rent your camper van, you travel around the country for the week. And there's an expectation for them to have services. Because as you said, you go to a beach in France and there are public showers, there are areas to park up your camper vans, etc. And there's actually official camper van sites on the prom in Lahinch. But the ones in Lahinch are parking spaces. They're not. There's no facilities for them. And because those spaces are there, there's an understanding that you can stay overnight, and actually you're not allowed to, technically.
Okay, stay with us, Ben. Joe at RT.ie 51551 is the text number. Colin Brehany. Colin, what part of the country are you in, Colin?
I'm in Cabinteely in Dublin at the moment.
Okay, and you say, I don't like to park where I'm not wanted.
No, I don't. And I'm listening to Ben there. Ben is kind of the type of person that he understands, I think, that, and you said it yourself, the I'm retired for the past 5 years. The people who have motorhomes, by and large, not entirely, are spending their leisure time, and they're actually bringing value to the places the Hinch.
Yeah.
And I can give you an example. I think 2 years ago, I was having a cove with my wife, and we were there for the weekend, and it cost me an absolute fortune. My wife went into town. She saw two jumpers that she bought for me. She saw a couple of other things for herself. And all we went for was a cup of coffee, and we came back spending €280.
Great.
Now, we don't do that everywhere, but they do bring value. And they also don't always. I phoned up to say that I don't approve of what I call wild camping. Wild camping, in my opinion, is staying where you're not wanted. Mm-hmm. But I would think that I would be wanted in somewhere like Lahinch, where they see that we bring value. But I also think that if they provide a space for 10, 20, it doesn't matter how many motorhomes, once it's full, then motorhomers should move on somewhere else. They shouldn't stay if the place is
so. What are you've been motorhoming, so to speak, in caravanning for 18 years? What are the facilities like in Ireland, and have they improved?
The facilities for caravans generally are quite good. And the tourist board provide a very high standard of caravan park, and motorhomes use caravan parks, and I use caravan parks quite a bit, but they don't always use them because we want to be in the centre of a location.
Yeah,
and
of course.
Very often the caravan parks are outside of the centre.
Yeah.
Because if we go in and we have a meal tonight and have a glass of wine, we can't drive home. We can't drive
good
back
point,
to our motorhome.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have the motorhome parked there. I would think that motorhomers use caravan parks probably 50% of the time, and 50% of the time they don't. Because they're travelling, they're not stopped. With a caravan, you go somewhere for 2 weeks. With a motorhome, you go somewhere, maybe for a week to the south of France, but it takes you 3 weeks to get there, and you're just moving all the time while you're getting to the south of France. And it's lovely just to find a nice little town that you can park in.
Yeah, and have facilities improved here?
The facilities have improved in some towns. Some county councils really approve of motorhomes and provide facilities. Cork, for example, provide a lot of facilities. They provide them in Cove and in Middleton and in a few other places, and they actively encourage motorhomers. Now, motorhomes, they charge for the night, and motorhomers don't mind paying for the night. The only facility that we need is somewhere to get water, to dispose of what we call our grey water, which is your washing up water, and black water is your toilet water. Now, we don't have to dispose of it every day because we can store 2 to 3 days' water. But if we have that, then they pay for it. They pay for the parking and the use of the water and the disposal of water. And so Cork are very good at it. Waterford are very good at supporting motorhomers. Clare and Galway County Councils in particular, and they are on the Wild Atlantic Way, which is a great driving route internationally for Ireland, but they do not encourage motorhome parking.
Okay. And what about, like, I know there's a pub near an area I know very well in Castletown and County Wexford, the Golden Acre. They have actually put in facilities in their car park. Would you get many private operations?
You get quite a number of them, and more and more each year. And particularly pubs are restaurants, and they say that you can park overnight if you use our facilities, and we're happy to use it to go in for a meal in the restaurant. And that is very popular. I mentioned that there's a community group now, and I'm not speaking with authority, but there's a community group in Greignamann and County Kilkenny. It's a community built. It's actually a community area, and they provide motorhome parking, I'd say, for about 30 to 40 motorhomes, and they charge, I think it's about 15 or 20 euro a night. But I'm told by the organisers of that brings in €1.5 million to the town of Greignamann, which is a lovely small country town. It has very little else. It's a beautiful town, it is, on the banks of the Nore.
Okay, where's, well, we'll go to the banks of the Barrow. Micah Janssen. Micah.
Hi, Joe.
How are you? Where are you based?
I'm in Greignamann.
Oh, brilliant. Sorry. Okay.
Yes.
And so, you say we accidentally set up a motorhome facility. Tell us how.
Yes. Well, it's campervans and motorhomes used to park up in Greignamann quite a lot. There wasn't a dedicated facility for them at the time.
Okay.
And the community group that was building an outdoor activities centre here had a large green site around it. And, one weekend there was a regatta on or something like that, and there was a lot of camper vans, and they were kind of in the way for car parking. And our chairman basically told them, look, just go over to our green site on the other side of the bridge. You can park there, and you won't be in our way. And might be much better for you.
Okay.
So they did, and when he came back the next day, they actually told him, look, this is a lovely spot. If we could park here more often, we'd be very happy to pay for it. And as he had a mortgage to pay at the time, that sounded like music in his ears. So it started from there, basically. Yeah.
And how many motorhomes can you facilitate?
Around 50.
Oh, well, fantastic.
So we've, over the last few years, we've put in a lot of facilities. We've improved the site specifically for camper vans and motorhomes. We've added electricity points, for instance. We're building a new toilet block. This is obviously all with the help of the Kilkenny County Council and Kilkenny Leader Partnership. But yes, so it's been a bit of a process, but it's looking good.
Was there any opposition?
Well, I suppose when things really took off, it was kind of during COVID, and at certain times, I suppose the local residents were a little bit concerned about COVID coming in with the tourists, of course, which is totally understandable, but that's not the case anymore. And as the previous caller mentioned, the economic benefits to the town of so many visitors every week have become apparent to most people. So I think everybody that visits here feels very welcome now. Yeah.
Excellent, excellent. And it's obviously quite close to the river, River Barrow. Yeah. Like, do people say, well, what about pollution and the river and we have to be careful, and how do we ensure that people...
Well, all the wastewater is treated as the wastewater from any building, so that doesn't have any extra loading on the river. No, not
fantastic.
Whatever.
And have local businesses noticed a positive uptick in business?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Okay. Yes, even the local supermarket, the butcher will ask me, are you full? Because I'll have to stock up extra if you are full. So, yeah, definitely.
And do you be full on occasions?
We're full every weekend.
Wow.
We have way more demand at weekends than we can accommodate.
So I have to book?
Oh, absolutely. We have an online booking system that works quite well, yeah.
And it's under the Barrow Valley Community Development Group.
Yeah, and we're kind of, in short, we're known as the hub in Gregnamana.
The hub. Okay.
Yeah.
And how much per night?
So we charge $14.50 per night without electric. And if they want to pitch with electric, it's $19.50 per night.
For God's sake, I'm on my way.
You're very
fantastic.
Welcome.
Fantastic. I love it. What a beautiful place. Gregnamana, St. Mullins. What a darling.
So much to offer for outdoor
activities. What a beautiful part of the country.
Yeah.
Say with us, Micah. Pat Esmond.
Okay.
Pat, you've done some, you have a camper van and you have some startling statistics when it comes to Dear Owl Ireland.
Yeah, Joe. I have a camper van nearly 20 years now. And there's in excess of 40 airs, what people know as places for campers to park.
Like the hub, yeah.
Yeah. And
so there's 40
in Germany.
There's 40 in Ireland. How many in France?
I'd say roughly 40 in Ireland, and there's in excess of 4,000 in France.
Wow!
And Germany have the equivalent, which is called Stella Plazas, and they probably have around 3,000.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Like your woman there from the hub said, that
Micah, it brings
revenue into the town. I've been in the hub numerous occasions. It's a great facility, right?
Brilliant.
And it brings a lot of money into the town. The first air in the country was in a place called Brushing Up in the Northern Ireland. And the first year that was in action, they had 6 spots for campers, and I reckon it brought in £1 million into Brushing the first year.
Wow.
And now they have a facility for 12, so they're expanding.
And like you say there's 4,000 motorhome sites serviced in France, and there's 40
in excess.
Okay, and 40 in Ireland. But who should provide them?
Well, I was on to Board Fáilte about them, right? And they'll tell you that there's in excess of 90 campsites in the country, and that's all they're concerned about. But like Micah said there, if you try booking her for the weekend, you won't get in. Like, if you try booking a campsite for next weekend, you won't get in either. There's not enough facilities for it. Like. And like a previous caller said, camper vans took off in Ireland over COVID. Like. And like me being a long-time camper thought that peter out, like to be all browned off in the
year.
But obviously now they're not, and people are liking them, and it's the freedom of it. Like, and like campers, like most campers won't leave waste behind them. It's a no-no for anyone to. It's like I say, you don't. It's like on a beach, you don't. You leave your tracks. That's it. Nothing else.
Okay. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I Jordan Coven. I went to a place called Inch Beach, and you used to be able to park on Inch Beach at your own risk. With the, they might even get flooded in, like, right? But I went down Jordan Cove, and you couldn't park there. They said there was a 300 fine for parking on it, right? And as a result of that, I wrote to the Minister for Tourism, right? I wrote to the Minister for Health, who was from down Dingle direction, like Norma Foley. I wrote to Michael Healy Ray. Yeah, and I wrote to Kerry County Council complaining about not being allowed park there, right? Norma Foley wrote back and said she'd take it up with the Dingle County or Urban UDC at the next meeting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Michael Healy Ray said, oh, I'm sorry you don't want to come to my lovely county. The Minister for Tourism said it's nothing got to do with her, which is I found very strange, so I just ignored her. And lo and behold, Kerry County Council never even bothered responding.
So they're not interested,
No, and like I said, the argument I gave to him was I was in Kerry 2 weeks before this incident. I was there in Inch, and I spent in excess of 700 quid in a week, right? And when I went down and I couldn't park an Inch, I wrote to them and told them I reluctantly spent 37 quid, like. So I says, if you don't want me and me camper van, you won't get my money.
Now, we have a statement from Clare County Council, and they say, Clare County Council, and if I had an heir to this, I'd sing it. That's what I'm reading out all the time. Clare County Council is unable to provide a spokesperson for the show. Please see below. Response to the queries raised. Please attribute to a spokesperson for Clare County Council. Of course I will. Basically, it's long, but basically it says, overnight camping, overnight parking of vehicles, including caravans and mobile campers, is prohibited, full stop, and is breaking the law, and is breaking the bylaw, and there will be liable to a payment of a parking fine. Okay. The Hinge Promenade is a car park only. Full stop. Thanks very much. I'll try to put an air to that.
But like, if they put in there, like I said, I was in Stonyford in Kilkenny the weekend, which is there's a pub, and he has opened an air at the back of his premises, right?
Okay.
And there was over 40 campers there the weekend.
Wow. Like,
you know, so like he's making money out of it. Like he's charging a small fee for the site and for electric, which is acceptable. And if people put in the effort to make a place for the campers to park, the campers will go, and like I said, I'll spend money in the place if you get somewhere to park. But I guarantee you, get someone in your office now to ring all the campsites in the country and see how many can get in for the next weekend. Like, I bet you won't get it.
Has to be all booked out,
Yeah. Now, like Mike has said, the hub is booked out next weekend. I know the hub is popular. There's loads of other places. There's a place down in Ardmore called Dix Field, who is a farmer looking out on the beach. He takes in, do you know how many campers he takes?
Now go on.
About 200, like.
Wow.
Now, that's what I'd call a cute farmer making a few bob. I've no problem with it. Like. And that's what a lot of the men should be doing, like. There's a big market there for it, and you can have little or no expense setting it up. An air can be parking for the night for a camper, right? Have no facilities whatsoever. But it's preferable if you can get water, empty your grey water, and empty your black water. That's all is required, like.
Yeah.
If the people in the country had sense and opened up spots to car. Like, I was in England there a couple of years ago and used the caravan camping place, like. And it could be a back garden of a house had three spots for campers, like.
And you need planning would you need planning permission? I presume you would if you're putting in.
I'd say you probably have, but you see, here is a bit slow on everything like that.
Yeah, but that's another 4 years. If you get planning permission, that's another 4 years.
Yeah. And another thing that Mike, I forgot to tell you, that the hub there will assist people looking to open an air. They will give them the guidance applying for the permission and help and everything for a small fee.
Is that true, Micah?
Yeah, that's true.
We
have done numerous site assessments and site visits over the last year or two.
Well done.
We write reports and we give advice. And actually, I should mention that there is a lot of councils actively looking for sites to provide facilities. But as you can understand, it's probably a slow process in most cases. So I think there's definitely an appetite with most councils to provide these kind of facilities. It will just take time before it catches up with the continent. That's what I would feel anyway.
But it is a consultancy and it's monetized. But you do actually provide advice if somebody is interested in setting up about.
Absolutely.
Well done. Okay, Ben, you want to make a point before we finish?
Yes, Joe, just quickly, on the reply from the Clare County Council,
yes.
The traffic wardens in Lahinch come on at 9 o'clock and finish at 6 o'clock. So they, in no time, can give any tickets to people because they can't prove they stayed overnight. So every morning here, there can be up to 10 or 15 cars parked. They look like they've stayed overnight, but the wardens won't give them tickets. I've never heard of a ticket being given in
Lahinch
for staying overnight because they can't prove it. Exactly.
And you couldn't prove if a camper van stayed overnight, could you?
Exactly. So,
okay.
So their argument that people get fined just is not true. It just doesn't happen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good evening, Margaret. That's Ben surfing there in the seafront in beautiful, beautiful Lahinch. Colin Brehany, Mikey Janssen from the Hub, and Greg Naman and Pat Esmond. Okay, back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Well, Clare County Council have been back on complaining, not about my singing, but the fact that they say a traffic warden, just Ben said they finish at 6 in the evening, they say a traffic warden patrols the area as required after 6 o'clock. Mary McDermott, Mary, good afternoon. 51551 is the text number. You're on holidays now. Where, Mary?
I'm down in Cove in County Cork.
Oh, lovely.
In my camper van, sitting looking out at the sea, and it's beautiful.
Brilliant.
And I've had this van for 15 years, Joe, and I really appreciate the facility that Cork County Council has put on. There's another one in Galway in Port Dumna Castle, magnificent. There's Micah's place down in Greig na Mana.
Yeah.
There's another site down in Wexford, a farmer has. Called Norman View, and there's
What part of Wexford is that? It's a big county, Mary. Down the south, yeah.
And there's one in Banno Bay. A young family with a farm have opened one in Banno Bay.
Okay.
There are plenty of places. I don't know why Clare County Council can't see their way to facilitating camper vans. They don't really cause any trouble. I've never had any trouble.
What do you love about the life, Mary?
I love the freedom of it.
Yeah.
I just love it. I just go as I please. Uh-huh. I make no plans. If the sun is shining, that's where I go. And I might stay one night, I might stay two nights, and then I move on to the next place. I don't leave any rubbish. I spend my money wherever I am.
Yeah.
You know, we do contribute to the community.
Of course,
that
yeah.
we stay in. I talk to people I meet on my travels. It's wonderful.
And
when
you take off in your motorhome, how long would you stay away for?
Oh, 2 or 3 weeks, and then I might go home for a few days and do the washing, and then off again. You know, if I need to go home for something, I go home. But otherwise, once we have the long evenings and bright days, I motor wherever I like. And I'm in the caravan club, and they provide great facilities for families with motorhomes or caravans because they'll hire a GAA pitch or something like that for a weekend, and families can all.
And have you made friends?
Loads, and I meet the same people.
And when you're on the road and driving, and another camper van. Even though you might know the content, you wave or do you flash your lights?
What's the protocol? Yeah.
You always wave.
A little wave, yeah.
It's very Irish. And Mary, you keep saying, is there a fuvia in the van, so to speak?
Well, I'm on my own at the moment, but sometimes
brilliant.
I have when I got this first, I travelled a lot on my own.
Right.
But now everybody wants to come with me. So I have a friend who just went home today, and I have another friend coming tomorrow. So
and they can come down by train or bus and meet you and hop on board.
Down on the
hop
train.
On board.
I have a lady who got the train from Cove to Cork to Houston to the Lewis and back out to North Dublin this morning. And I have another friend coming down tomorrow from Dublin.
Magic.
And I motor along another bit after that.
And you know the way they say, Mary, travel broadens the mind.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I've never known Ireland as well as I have since I bought the camper.
Of course.
You go into every little corner, little villages, different communities.
And we ever run out of anywhere, Mary?
Not at all.
Not at all.
No, I don't park where I shouldn't park.
Okay. You're great.
In the beginning, it was all campsites. In the beginning, but I don't need all the facilities of the campsite. They'll have playgrounds.
Yeah, and then you'd rather be near the centre of things, wouldn't you? When you have your motorhome.
It depends on. Some families have camper vans, and then they would want playgrounds. Where I am at the moment, there's a wonderful playground. But I don't need all those facilities. And as the man said, you wouldn't get a booking in a campsite. And you might pay €50 a night for a campsite.
Yeah.
If you want.
Wow.
X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
But it's €10 here in Cove for a night. And all they provide is a good big parking space looking at the sea. You could wake up in the morning and see a cruise ship. And then they provide clean water. There's a porter cabin toilet.
Yeah.
They provide facilities to empty your toilet and to empty dirty water. And there are recycling facilities. So it's perfect.
Isn't that magic?
And you're right beside the train station. You can go into Cork if you want to.
Isn't that magnificent? And then there's loads of things. Loads of things. And beautiful cathedral, the Titanic exhibition, the history
Spike
go out.
Island.
Spike Island is unbelievable,
Fota.
Isn't it?
Fota,
yeah.
I've done them all from here. And like, you're paying for all those, but it's wonderful.
Yeah, well done. And Mary, would you hit the ferry in Ringaskiddy or Rosslare? Would you go continental or even to...
I've been to France, to Normandy and Brittany, but something always seems to happen to stop me from going again. But I'm hoping to get in the next year maybe to Santander in the winter
time. The other way down, near
trip,
Bilbao, Fantastic, Mary.
Yeah. Oh, it's a great life, Joe.
Okay. And long are you on the road, as the fella says?
Well, I've had this for 15 years. This is my 15th summer or 16th. And but I just go when the long evenings, once the clock goes.
Off you go.
You know, clock goes forward or back or whichever way.
And it's fairly, I presume it's very safe.
It's very safe.
Yeah.
I wouldn't park anywhere I shouldn't park.
Yeah.
If you park where the campers are.
Yeah,
where,
but you wouldn't get late at night with a few fellas with a few jars and them coming out of the local pub over and knocking saying, can I have two fresh cod and two singles?
Well, they don't, never happened to me anyway.
Okay. Well done, Mary. Safe travelling, Mary.
Okay, Joe, lovely to talk to you.
Likewise, and safe travelling. Hope the people at Cove go over. Well, they will anyways, because Mary's very friendly disposition, as you can hear. Where is Neil Doherty? Neil Doherty's in Belmullet. Neil.
Joe, how are you doing?
Good. What's happening in Belmullet, County Mayo?
It's all happening. I do know, Joe, you've heard about Belmullet on a few occasions, particularly because more recently about the weather forecast that...
of course, Sir Margaret Sweeney,
Day. That's right, indeed. But Joe, I just mentioned that we have a very good facility for waste here, for camper van waste. And it's right, actually in the town itself, it's actually on the dock. So it's a fantastic place for camper vans to come and dispose of their waste. And to be fair, Mayo County Council have been very active in welcoming camper vans here, particularly with that in the town, as I say. So that's very convenient because if any of the drivers want to go and visit any of the local hostelries, go for a few pints, or whatever, or go for a meal, well then, of course, they don't have to do any driving afterwards because they're right in the centre of town.
Fantastic, yeah.
Yeah. Also, we just opened down here a wonderful new centre called Sulis, down in Athleen, which is a world-class centre, giving the whole history of the area, history of the islands, the D-Day weather forecast, and also lots of other information about the area, you know. And then, to be fair, you mentioned Mayo County Council, so I live just overlooking a Blue Flag Beach, and they've recently extended a car park down here in order to facilitate camper vans to park overnight. There isn't any wastewater facility for them here, but they do have toilets and waste bins, okay, but a typical of Blue Flag beaches, you know.
And it's a good start.
Absolutely. Okay. So we've seen a big increase in the number of camper vans coming down here as a result of that, you know.
Okay, well done. That's Neil Dougherty and Bell Mullet back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Paul Morris, you went to Scotland last week. You hired a camper van. How did that work out?
It was fantastic, Joe. We did it at the end of last summer. It was September.
Oh, last summer, okay.
Toured around the north of Scotland. They have reintroduced what they call wild camping, which is you can park anywhere. Once you leave the place clean, no charge, no fines. The mobile home parks and all that, and the camping sites were all full. You know, there wasn't enough of them. And there were so many people hiring camper vans or camping. And it was a fantastic experience.
And what do you mean wild camping? Are there facilities, toilet facilities?
No facilities. Because you have you would have facilities in the camper van itself. But you park anywhere. You find a safe place at the side of a road or an off cut or in the hills or the mountains, and you're free to park there. They had restrictions up to a couple of years ago, and they've lifted them on. They found it really, really successful.
Okay. So there's no signs like you see in Clare. If you park here overnight, you're liable to be fined. It's illegal. It's illegal, and you're open to be fined €300 or whatever.
No, it used to be illegal over there. They went through a phase where it was illegal.
Okay.
And now they've changed all of that. And, you know, it's just done so much for the tourism and the economy. It's brilliant.
It's expensive to hire one out for a week, by the way.
I think it's a little over a week. I think it was £1,000 for a 5 berth, and there's only two of us. So it's very comfortable. Very.
Yeah, but it's seven nights, 1,000, facilitate two people and go as you want and go as you will. Okay, Paul Gurumina Maga, James Coyle, everyone agrees, I think, listening today, there should be more facilities around Ireland. You've done England, you've done Cornwall.
Yeah.
And you bought your camper van in the UK.
Yeah, we did. We bought the camper van in the UK and imported it to Ireland.
Okay.
Just a better selection of them in the UK.
Of course, yeah.
And it's been fantastic 6 years of vanning. We would tend to do a bit of what they call wild camping, which is where you would find a car park that isn't barriered. There's a lot of car parks are barriered.
Yeah, right. And it has a height restriction as well, don't they?
Well, how they stop you coming in, because most camper vans are, you can stand up inside them, and that means that they're 2.5 meters high, and the barrier is lower than that, you know. So we do a lot of wild camping, but at the same time, we'd like if it was made legal and if we didn't have to ignore overnight camping signs. Mm. Mostly they're not enforced,
but you're
always worried that you'll get a knock be told to move on. But it doesn't happen, actually, I can tell you that.
Okay. And by the way, what's the protocol when you meet another camper van on the road? Do you wave? Do you flash your lights? Because I know you meet people, but when you're travelling in opposite directions, is there a little community where you do wave to each other? And have you met many new people through vanning?
Yes, plenty.
Isn't that great?
Probably not lifelong friends, but certainly borrow an egg or yeah. lend a cup of milk or just have a laugh and a bottle of beer. You know?
Yeah, and is there a good guidebook or an app that you, for Ireland and these? I know there's...
There are loads.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. We might get the names and put them up.
Facebook user groups and...
Okay.
If you put up a query on one of these user groups, you get 10 answers.
Okay.
Useful, you know.
Okay, no lifelong friends, just ones for the road. Isn't that right, James? Just
ones for the road. But
okay.
What I would say is that it's a lot of retired people who have yeah. time on their hands and who are just wanting to enjoy their own home
yeah,
country
wow.
Without being hassled and...
Yeah.
And
the freedom and the independence and when you go and not worried about pilots going on strike and all that carrying. Okay, James, Kyle, safe travelling. joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Jason Carmody is chairperson of the Irish Motorhome Working Group. What's it looking like, Jason? Are there going to be more facilities for vanners, for camper vans?
Hi, Joe. Can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, so, Joe, I'm the chairperson of the Irish Motorhome Working Group.
Okay.
And I just said I'd come on today. What we do as a group, Joe, is we promote the advantages of motorhoming to county councils and to different parts of the country. Now, I've extensively travelled the continent over the years. I've been motorhoming for quite a few years. I've been on the continent for about 25 years, and I can see the facilities and the advantages of the facilities on the continent. In Ireland, we have some air facilities and some provided by councils, but not enough, not near enough. Since the last census, there has been a 300% increase in motorhome ownership between the two censuses.
Wow.
I think it was 9 or 10 years ago, yeah. So a massive increase, especially during...
So what are the prospects for more facilities?
So the prospects for more facilities, unfortunately, from our input, is councils are saying, yes, we will look at the option to put these facilities in place, but it's very, very, very slow. Clonmel, for example, have put in a brilliant air facility in County Tipperary, and it's been utilised and full every weekend. Cove, there was a lady on there, Mary, I think she was in Cove, not a great facility provided by Cork County Council.
Okay.
But every county council in this country could provide air parking spaces for motorhomes, and the local economies will do great from these facilities. Now, I myself, I've opened a private campsite and air facility. So
okay.
It's kind of a very unique facility. I opened that about 24 weeks ago, and it is doing really well. It's called Limerick Campsite and Air. I'm full most weekends, and people are telling me they just cannot get spots.
Well, we need more. Okay. Thanks indeed. Michael Guilfoyle, did you sleep in your car or in a van?
Joe, it was just after. Do you know that period when we were allowed out to travel anywhere in the country?
Off you went.
But there was nowhere to stay. So, and I tried to get into a campsite down in Clare because I'd seen the programme, our beautiful RTE programme, Heart of Stone.
Okay, well, what did you sleep in?
I slept in my car, yeah.
Okay, that's...
along with about 10 other people. This was before what your previous speaker there described as the 300% increase in motorhome ownership. People just exploded out around the country and stayed in tents and cars.
So
and
you're well, yeah, well, okay. That's your independence. Okay. I'm out of time, Michael. One for the road. Thanks indeed, Michael Guilfoyle, research Clara Hughes, producer Net Egan. Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Step into summer with our new curtain designs and colours. Explore our latest designs in store or online.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.